The writer is Todd Purdom. He's a national editor and political correspondent for Vanity Fair magazine. Purdom grew up in Macomb and was back in town to sign copies of his new book, An Idea Whose Time Has Come. During an interview at New Copperfield's book service, Purdom said he had never come across a book that really delved into the battle to win approval of the Civil Rights Act.
And I didn't realize what a huge grassroots effort there had been across the country, not just as we think of, you know, the March on Washington and Dr. King, but a huge interfaith coalition of religious groups who targeted their efforts really strategically on the Midwest and the Plain States, where congressmen and senators did not have large black constituencies but had lots of Methodists and Presbyterians and Baptists and Catholics and would be susceptible to an appeal from the pulpit. And with almost pinpoint precision, they focused on those particular members and had a devastating effect. I knew, having grown up in Illinois and my mother's father was a friend of Senator Dirksen, I knew that the bill was a bipartisan effort, and I knew that Republicans were obviously crucial to its passage because of the divisions among the Democrats, the Southern Democrats being so opposed to any change in the status quo. But I didn't realize what an overwhelmingly bipartisan effort it was, and that in the Senate, for example, the bill passed 73-27 with 27 out of 33 Republican votes. So in proportional terms, the Republicans were actually far more important. And, you know, nothing could pass the Senate 73-27 today, not an agreement on the shape of the table. I mean, it's kind of breathtaking. And so the more the research I did, the more I thought this story would be timely and welcome because it stands in such a complete contrast to what's going on in Washington today.
Was that sort of bipartisan cooperation unusual for that time, or was that more the norm up until recent times?
It was more the norm in some ways. It was especially the norm on civil rights because there were really, in functional terms, three parties. And so the big Democratic majorities that President Kennedy and President Johnson had in the Congress were really an illusion because the Southerners were totally opposed to civil rights.
As you grew up in Macomb, were you aware of the impact of this legislation?
I don't know what the situation is like today, but when I grew up in Macomb, there were really maybe 10 or 15 black families in Macomb. And I confess that I didn't really have any black classmates in my elementary school. I had a few black classmates at Edison and at Macomb High. But like President Kennedy and to a certain degree like most of the members of Congress, we got to remember at this time there were five black members out of 535 in the House and Senate who were black. Everyone else was white. The black people I knew growing up were, you know, the janitor in my father's office, a wonderful man named Joe Coleman, and his wife Nadine, who sometimes helped out at holidays with doing kitchen work for my mother or for my grandmother. And I did not know black professionals. John Kennedy, when he was running for president in 1960, was asked by a black dentist in San Francisco how many black professionals he knew, and he said he didn't know more than five that he could call by their first name. But he ultimately came very firmly to the side that this was a moral issue that had to be confronted by the country. And when he proposed the bill in June of 1963, he said just that. He said this is primarily a moral issue, as old as the scriptures and as clear as the American Constitution. And no president had ever really said anything like that. And I think sometimes President Kennedy's boldness and courage in doing that gets a little bit lost in memory because he made so many other speeches, the Ich bin ein Berliner, ask not what your country can do for you. But I think in some ways the speech he made on June 11th, 1963 was really the bravest speech of his life.
Even the version passed under Johnson is watered down. What was left out of it?
Well, you know, it got watered down in some sense in that it did not do the things that the most ardent advocates of civil rights wanted it to do. So, for example, the voting rights provision was comparatively weak. It didn't apply to state and local elections. It didn't outlaw literacy tests. That was left for the next year to the Voting Rights Act, where they came back and finished the job. But unlike most civil rights bills before this, it really did get stronger at every step of the way. And by the end of the passage, there was a much stronger provision on employment discrimination than had been in the initial Kennedy bill. And because of the mischief of one of the civil rights opponents in the House, Howard Smith of Virginia, the chairman of the Rules Committee, he was hoping to insert a poison pill that might kill the bill. So on the Saturday morning when it was being debated near final passage in the House, he inserted the word sex as a protected category of employment discrimination. And all the male chauvinists who were running the place went crazy because they thought this might doom the bill. But the handful of women members of the House rose up and said, this is the least you can give us, and it will make the bill stronger. And in fact, when the bill was passed and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission got up and running a year later, the first flood of complaints were not racial discrimination but gender discrimination, and it revolutionized the workplace and revolutionized the field of women's law and women's rights and really gave a tremendous boost to the women's movement, all because of this horrible old racist who was hoping to scuttle the bill.
Writer Todd Purdom is author of An Idea Whose Time Has Come. It's about the battle over the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Purdom believes there is much greater equality today on issues such as health and access to college, but he feels racial disparities still exist on issues such as median income and lifetime earning power. I'm Rich Egger, Tri-State's Public Radio News.